Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been hanging around already, well, I know you're pretty thrilled about that, aren't you? We got our good buddy Matt Cartwright with us. Matthew Cartwright is an attorney. He's with Munley and Cartwright in the great state of Pennsylvania. And he's the author of the next great book by a lawyer. We don't know what it's going to be called yet, but he's got one coming out. We got one in him. We just got to get it out of him. Matthew, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
And great. Good to have you here.
Good. We were just talking about how you're right in the path of Hurricane Katrina.
Well, there's a whole lot of United States is right in the path of hurricane. I saw one estimate that New York's going to be getting some of it in about 3 days or so. It's I really am saying a little prayer for all the folks down there and along the Gulf Coast and New Orleans and all up through there. I hope they fare well today.
Yeah, me too. I understand the gas and oil prices are going to go up just because so much of our refinery takes place in that part of the country.
Well, it's actually a triple whammy, Matt, for three reasons. Number one is you got the oil rigs have been abandoned largely because of the hurricane. That's one. Those Mobile several other places there, and as well as New Orleans, are major ports for offloading oil from other countries, and then you got the refinery too. So you got three challenges there. So yeah, the oil prices may go up. Yes, yeah, it's like we needed that, huh?
I know I didn't.
Yeah, Matt, I want to, folks. We're going to talk about a couple of things today. The second thing we're going to talk about is the RICO Act that we want you to know about. Well, we'll tell you about that in a little bit if you haven't already heard about it, but it's been around a long time, 20 plus years, but it's something that I want you to know about, and Matt's going to talk to us about it. But before we get there, Matt, I've got a pet peeve that I want to get off my chest, and I want you to help us with this.
Well, venting will help, I think.
Yeah, I know it does sometimes. Folks, you may have heard me a few days ago say that I was complaining to somebody, I think, on the air, that I've been getting contracts, agreements in from major corporations that are totally one-sided in the areas that don't have to be one-sided. Now, Matt, I understand that if, you know, the joke across a business table is who does the documents. And because, you know, if you do the documents, it's at your expense in an agreement. If you and I are putting a deal together, if I do the documents, it's at my expense. But I get to write the documents the way I think they ought to be, which would be in my favor. I understand the deal points being that way. But what I don't understand is why I get a contract in for the obligatory sections of a contract, and you know what those are, Matt, and folks, you probably do too. There are certain sections of a contract that's in virtually every contract, and I'm seeing those sections that used to be written in a bilateral way, where it applies equally to both parties. I'm seeing those sections now coming in a unilateral way, where they're biased toward the person who's giving me the contract, and they're requiring me to do things that they don't require themselves to do. Why is that happening, Matt?
Sure, yeah, and you're talking about things like mutual
indemnification
clauses,
exactly,
that aren't mutual anymore.
Right.
Why?
And those ought
that?
To be throwdowns, shouldn't they, Matt?
They should, I think parties dealing at arm's length and good faith negotiations don't do things like that.
But what do we think when we get something in like this from a Fortune 100 company?
Well, a lot of times what's going on is you have an in-house counsel trying to be a hero, trying to justify his or her job. And I see what you're talking about. That should be a pet peeve.
It's bullying. Matt.
It should be. Pardon me?
It's bullying.
Well, it kind of is, and it's something that small business people have to watch out for because it's a function of unequal bargaining power. If you're a little mom-and-pop shop dealing with a huge company, they don't have to deal with you, but you kind of have to deal with them. so that they can take advantage of that. There's a way around that, though, and one thing you want to think about is if you have a big company trying to ram something like this down your throat and you don't have any other choice, make it clear. Make it clear in writing that they're taking the position that it's my way or the highway. Either you sign their form with their boilerplate or they're not dealing with you. If you do that, if there is a dispute later on and you want to point out that there was this overreaching going on, this abuse of unequal bargaining power going on, mm-hmm. you'll have it in writing that they refused to deal with you except on these explicit terms.
So you're saying if you sign the agreement, send them a side note, even an email possibly, to say that you object to this kind of language or something like that. I want to finish this up, folks, and then we're going to move on to RICO. But this is a very important thing that you're going to start noticing more, like I have recently, if you haven't already. 20 Till, stay with us. We're back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And having a great visit with our good friend Matt Cartwright. Matthew Cartwright is an attorney with Mundley and Cartwright, and he is one of the top attorneys in our brain trust. And Matthew, give us your website, please, at your law firm, please.
Oh, sure. It's www.munley.com.
All right. Check it out, folks. It's not your grandfather's attorney's website. So you want to be sure you check out, because everybody needs to see what an attorney's website looks like. Matthew, I'm going to come back to just for a moment. I want to come back to this thing that we were talking about. And folks, this is where you may be getting in a non-disclosure agreement, you may be getting in some kind of a contract from a company larger than yours, and in the old days you would have expected the indemnification section to say something like this: the parties, plural, agree to indemnify each other of all these things that nobody ever expects to ever happen. But now what you may start seeing is, you indemnify us, but we don't indemnify you, either specifically or implied. And there are other things too. There was one that I saw where Matt, where whatever I took to the meeting, they wanted to claim as their copyright, but I couldn't infringe on their copyright. Nothing in their agreements gave my copyrights or my property, my intellectual property, any standing. And it was the thing that got me about that, Matt, was it was like, we're going to be aggressive and in your face moment one. And I just think that's very unfortunate.
Well, as I say, many large Fortune 500 companies behave themselves, and they
most of them
their
do.
Vendors and suppliers and their business partners respectfully, but some don't. Some are right out there to abuse their unequal bargaining power, and they're going to tell you, either you sign our form or we're not doing business with you. Your best protection is to make sure you have that in writing. And the best way to do that is, for example, an email, as you mentioned. Send them an email. Do you mind if we take out paragraphs 16 and 18? I think those are unfair, and that wasn't part of what we talked about when we made this deal. And by the way, are you offering me any extra money for those paragraphs?
Right.
And then you'll get an email back, and then they'll say, well, you know, to make those changes, we'd have to run it by corporate legal.
Mm-hmm. That's what happens.
We don't find that feasible. So if you want this deal, sign it as is. Once you have that in writing, you've established two things. Number one, that is what we call a contract of adhesion. You had no choice but to sign that or not get the deal. Number two, it also establishes that there was no consideration for those particular paragraphs. So if later on there becomes a dispute and one of those paragraphs comes into play, you have a better than even shot of persuading a judge or jury that those paragraphs should not count because it's a contract of adhesion or because there was no extra consideration for those contracts.
So basically you could just send them an email or a letter and say, I'm signing this agreement, but I want you to know that I disagree with the language. I feel like the language in Section 8 is too unilateral. It's just too inequitable when it could be. Signed, Jim, or whatever.
Yeah, and hopefully
and keep a
you'll
copy
get back
of that, by
something
the way.
In writing saying, no, it's our way or no deal at all.
Right. And so if you send something like that, that simple, folks, keep a copy of it. Even if it's an email, keep a copy of it. You may be able to prevail in court later. And at least that gives you some kind of a better feeling about it. And, Matt, I appreciate you addressing that little pet peeve for me. I'm really concerned that more and more people are going to start seeing that. Now let's move on.
Not at all. And it addresses something that's been one of my major themes with you, Jim, is that the biggest threat to small businesses is not lawsuits. That could be the biggest savior to a small business. Biggest threat is often the bigger business.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to RICO.
Sure.
Tell us what RICO is.
Well, RICO is what small business people should know about, too, because that's something that makes one of your enemies, if it turns out that way, able to turn what they can accuse you of, a regular garden variety business fraud, into a racketeering case. You can be accused of racketeering, believe it or not, they don't have to be Clarence Darrow to figure out how to accuse you of racketeering if it's some kind of an overcharging case, or maybe instead of accusing you of puffing one of your products, they can accuse you of fraud, and if they can plead that artfully, they can translate that into a racketeer influenced and corrupt organizations claim against your company. And the reason they do that is that it entitles a RICO victim to treble damages plus attorney's fees plus punitive damages. So it's a real hammer that is often used in commercial litigation, and something that small business people should know about. It's a statute that came into effect in 1970, and it was a response to what Congress perceived as increasing racketeer activity. We're talking about mobsters,
right?
Taking over small businesses, using bribery, extortion, fraud, things like that.
What would be an example of how a small? And quickly, I'm going to a break here. What would be an example of a small business getting themselves into a RICO bind?
Well, if a big business accuses them of overcharging on purpose and they're using the mails more than once to do it, they can easily get sued for RICO.
Stand by. Quick break. We'll be right back with more of RICO and how you and I could get ourselves into a bind, probably without realizing it, after these messages. Tintel, stay with us. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, in Matthew Cartwright is our guest and our good friend and longtime member of our Brain Trust. And we're talking about the RICO Act, folks. And I happen to know that the RICO Act stands for Racketeering Influence and Corrupt Organization. How about that? So if you ever wondered what that was, now you know. And you don't get that kind of information just on any radio show either, by the way, Matt. We're talking about if you should happen to overbill, accidentally or not. Let's presume, Matt, that it's accidentally, or that maybe an employee did it intentionally, but the company didn't intend for it to be that way. It was just something that happened, something that should have been able to be cleared up, but a big company, maybe a larger a customer, decided that maybe somebody should be, should pay for this. What do you think?
Well, what they'll do is they'll get their legal department involved. Their legal department will then hire outside counsel who will want to show off their aggressive trial skills to their client, and they'll sue you for RICO.
Even though there may be questionable basis for it?
Well, if they get overcharged, they're going to start out from the presumption that you did it on purpose. And if you didn't do it on purpose, your employee did it on purpose to help your company, and there's no practical difference between mm-hmm. those two.
Can't we assume that if they were overbilled, they would at least call us or write us a letter or say we think we were overbilled. What are you going to do about it?
Or maybe there's something else going on. Maybe the CEO of that company's brother-in-law started up a competitor of yours, and he wants to get out of your contract.
Oh, yeah.
So he's trying something. He's got something else in mind. So a RICO case has such leverage with it that they might try that. Let me give you a brief nutshell of how RICO evolved. It started out with Congress trying to regulate businesses and keep the mob out of the businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And what they said, it's a crime for two or more people to get together and influence a company through a series of predicate acts. And we're talking predicate acts are criminal acts such as wire fraud, mail fraud, bribery, extortion, things like that. And they made a list of those, and they enacted that into law. Well, over through the 1970s, people didn't really realize that the language of the statute is not confined to La Cosa Nostra. It's not just the mob. It's any company that can be hooked into these predicate acts. And fraud is the easiest one. Most civil business litigation, not most of it, but a great deal of it has to do with business fraud, garden variety fraud cases.
Right.
Of 270 federal cases of civil RICO that had been filed in the 15 years between 1970 and 1985, only nine of them were in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. Lawyers started to realize you could use RICO in business fraud cases, so that almost all of the cases came up between 80 and 85. Then in 1985, the U.S. Supreme Court decided that, yes, this RICO statute does apply to all businesses, and it's not just businesses that were convicted of crimes.
Matt, I've only got about a minute left. What kind of policies can a Small Business Institute to avoid this kind of a problem?
Well, the way to avoid it is to avoid putting yourself in a situation where you can be accused of any kind of a fraud. So if you have any hint that there might be an accusation of overcharging, conduct internal audits.
Mm-hmm.
Have people look at the bills going out very carefully.
Maybe bring in a third party or something.
Do that. Also, fraud accusations happen where, there's puffing going on. You're overstating what you're selling.
Mm-hmm.
Be extra careful about that when you're dealing with a big company that may have a reason to want to get out of the contract with you.
And if you find out that an employee has done something like that, don't wait till they contact you. Go to the customer and contact them first and say, let's make sure we get this cleared up.
Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. Good advice, good counsel, and good information. Matt, thank you very much for being here today. Good job today.
Thanks. Always good to talk to you. Good luck with Katrina.
Thanks. Give me the website one more time.
Sure. www.munley.com.
Munley.com. That's Matthew Cartwright, ladies and gentlemen, one of the resident attorneys in our brain trust. Thanks, Matthew. We'll see you next time.
Got to
go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you in just a few minutes.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.